Kings chapter 3. 1 Kings chapter 3. I'd like to read verses 5 through verse 15. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he hath walked before thee in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, and thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord, my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David, my father. And I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered or counted for multitude. Give, therefore, thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this, thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord, that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, "Because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to thy words. Though I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days." And Solomon awoke, behold, it was a dream. He came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings, and made a feast to all his servants. We see here that Solomon in verse 5 has arrived in Gibeon. He has gone there to offer sacrifice. And while at Gibeon, the Lord appears to Solomon in a dream. We're twice told that it was a dream, once in verse 5 and once in verse 13. And such revelations, that is, dreams from God, were not uncommon. We think of Jacob, we think of Joseph, both experienced this. But in this dream, God invited Solomon to ask whatever he wanted. There in verse 5, "Ask what I shall give thee." And it is from there that we want to take the main thought of the message. Ponder the thought: if God were to appear to you and say, "Ask for anything that you want," what would we ask for? What would we ask for? Some might say, well, it would depend on when he asked. Really, it shouldn't. The majority of people would ask for things or ask for something that would solve a current problem, a current need, rather than asking for something that would be all-encompassing for their life. What we want from God is really based upon what we understand about God and what we understand about ourselves. So God appears to Solomon and he says, "Ask what I shall give thee." Solomon has the opportunity to ask for anything. And the emphasis of the message is the emphasis of this passage of Scripture is what Solomon asked for and what he didn't ask for. So again, if God were to appear and say, ask for anything that you want, what would you ask for? Some would say, well, I would ask that God would save my children or my grandchildren. And those are good things to ask. But we need to examine what is it that consumes our prayer time. What is it that we ask for generally? We need to scrutinize our wish list. We need to search through the desires and the longings and the passion of our hearts. So I want to speak this evening on what we need from God. What we need from God. Make 2 points. The first is the spirit necessary to ask for the right thing. To ask for the right thing. If God were to say to us, ask for anything you want, I'm afraid that most would ask for the wrong thing. There is a certain spirit that is required in order to ask for the right thing. And then secondly, we'll look at what Solomon asked for. But first of all, consider the spirit necessary to ask for the right thing. We made the statement earlier that what we want from God is based upon what we understand about God, what we understand about ourselves. In light of that, the question that God puts forth to Solomon involves two parties. Ask what I, that's God, shall give thee. That's Solomon or us. So it is God and me. It is God and us. And in Solomon's answer, we notice some characteristics of Solomon's spirit at this time that led him to ask for what he asked for. First of all, notice that he had a recognition of God. Right after God said to Solomon, ask what I shall give thee, Solomon says 4 times in verse 6 and in verse 7, thou hast. Thou hast. 4 times in verse 6 and verse 7. Thou hast. So in light of the question, or in light of the statement, ask what I shall give thee, Solomon starts with God. He doesn't start with himself. He starts with God. Thou hast. And in light of the statement from God, Solomon begins to brag to God about God. That's what he's doing in verses 6 and verse 7. He's bragging to God about God. This is his reply to the statement, ask whatever it is that you would like to ask for. As you read verse 6 and 7, these are the words of a man who had a realization of God's presence. Here is a man who knew to whom he was speaking. Solomon is praising God for who he is. He's thanking him for what he's done. He's recognizing God's mercy. He's recognizing God's kindness. Again, verse 6, and Solomon said, thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy. He's recognizing the work of God. He's recognizing the mercy of the Lord. According as he has walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and uprightness of heart with thee, thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of my father. He is recognizing several things about God. He recognizes the providence of God. He recognizes the direction of God. He recognizes how that God has orchestrated all this. God made his father king. Now God has made Solomon king. What he's saying is, God, I realize that my father David did not get to the throne because of his talent. He did not get to the throne because of his power, but he got to the throne by you. And I also realize that I did not get here by my power. I did not get here by my genealogy. I got here because of you. So he begins with God. He understands some things about God. Then notice verse 7. And now, thou hast, and now. And then Solomon proceeds to recognize that it was God who brought him to the throne at this time. He is saying, the same way that you brought my father to the throne, through your mercy and kindness, you have done the same with me. Solomon is recognizing the sovereignty of God. Solomon is recognizing that all blessings flow from God. And we must remember, this is his first response to the statement of the Lord, ask whatever you will. And Solomon begins to brag about God. He begins to tell the greatness of the Lord. Here was a man who recognized, had an understanding about the Lord. He also recognizes something about himself. He recognizes that he's God's servant. Verse 7, verse 8, and verse 9, three times he refers to himself as thy servant. With those words, he recognized, I belong to God, I have an obligation to God, and I have a purpose in my life. He realized that he was a servant of God. That comes in handy, that's very beneficial, when it comes time to bring petitions to God. We must realize we're the servant. We're the servant. He's in control. And Solomon is recognizing these things. He also recognizes his own insufficiency and ignorance. Verse 7, he says, I'm but a little child. Now, Solomon wasn't a child in years. But he says, I'm but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. He's saying, Lord, I'm clueless. Here I am, the king. And I don't know how to go in as a king, and I don't know how to come out as a king. I don't know what to do as a king. He is confessing his ignorance and his insufficiency. Solomon is saying, Lord, regardless of my pedigree, my dad was a king, but regardless of my pedigree, I know not what to do. He is saying, regardless of the experience that I've had with my father's kingship, I know not what to do. He is saying, regardless of all the exposure that I've had to a king. His dad was a king. He's had exposure to the throne. He's had exposure to kingship. I've seen my father reign as king, yet I know not what to do. I know not how to be king. He's saying, God, I'm clueless. We have to realize that about ourselves before we'll ask for the right thing. As long as we think we can control something, As long as we think that we have some sufficiency in ourselves, we're not going to ask for the right things. So these are very important characteristics to have. He also recognizes the responsibility of his calling. Notice verse 8. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people. Thy people. He's realizing the importance of his position. It's not thy servant is in the midst of all this people. It's thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen. He realized that he had a responsibility to the people of God. A great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Solomon recognizes the awesome position that God has set him in. He realizes the responsibility of that position. He recognizes that he has been called. He has been positioned by God. And he sees that as an awesome responsibility. Every one of us has been called. Talking to God's people. You think about all the times and all the places that God could have placed us in. He placed us in this time. That's our calling. That's our position. Oh, you can bemoan all you want how bad the times. This is our time. This is where God has placed us. It is a calling. It is a calling to live for God in this time. God, if he so chose, we could have been born 200 years ago or 1,000 years ago. But we weren't. And God's in control of all of that. You think of all the places that God could have placed us. He could have placed us in other countries. He could have placed us in other states. He could have placed us in other towns. But he placed us in the state of Michigan, in Clio, Mount Morris area. That's where he's placed us. And we have a responsibility. We have a calling. You think about all the families that God could have placed you in. Think of all the families that the Lord could have placed you in, but he didn't. He placed you in the particular family that you were in. That's where he placed you. And such is a calling. Such is a responsibility of each one of us. You think of all the children that God could have given you. But he gave you the ones you have. And that's a calling. That's a responsibility. It's not my calling. It's not my responsibility to raise someone else's children. God gave us children to raise. And that was our responsibility. That was our calling. Isn't it amazing how people want to do everything but what God's called them to do? I mean, this is a big problem in marriage. If wives would get a hold of this truth, the husband is the head, he is accountable. Why would you want to be accountable? Why would you want to be? Why would you want to take over? He's accountable. Leave it there. Same with a pastor. Why would you want to pastor the church? Let him pastor. He's accountable. Why would you want to take that accountability? It's because people want to do everything but what they're called to do. They want to raise everyone else's children. Well, I would do this. And they didn't even do it with their own. But again, of all the families, of all the children that God could have given us, he gave us the ones we have. And they're a calling, and that's a calling. That's a responsibility. Of all the people that God could have given you for a spouse, He gave you a certain one. And that's a calling. And it's a responsibility. Of all the people that God could have caused us to know, He's brought particular individuals into our lives. That's no accident. That's no coincidence. That's part of our calling. It's part of our responsibility. Of all the churches that God could have placed us in, He placed us here. And that's a calling. That's a responsibility. Solomon recognized his calling. And he recognized, again, with every calling of God, there is an awesome responsibility. And he recognized this. And all the need to recognize our calling and responsibility. So we see here is a man who recognized God. Here is a man who recognized himself as a servant of God. Here is a man who recognized his own ignorance and insufficiency. And here is a man who recognized an awesome responsibility that was before him. And every single one of us, as a child of God, have an awesome responsibility. God placed you in the neighborhood you're in, that's an awesome responsibility. God placed you in the job you're in, that's an awesome responsibility. And on we could go. But notice what Solomon asked for. In verse 9, after he confessed his ignorance, his insufficiency, he said, "Give therefore." The therefore goes back, has its basis upon a couple of things. The greatness of God, because God is great. Because of Solomon's insufficiency and ignorance, and on the basis of the responsibility before him, he said, "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart." Solomon is saying, "God, I don't know what to do, but I do know this. What I need to get the job done has to come from you." All to know that truth. For every mom and dad to know that truth. To get the job done, you need what can only come from God. And that goes with everything. He's basically saying here, "God, I don't want to mess up, and I need you. I need you." There are not many that realize that today. That doesn't surprise us, of course, in the world. But it is somewhat surprising that that's even true of God's people. Oh, there's times when people realize, "I need the Lord." You need Him every second. Every single second. And that's what Solomon is saying here. He's saying, "God, I need you." He's feeling a sense of urgency. He says, "Give thy servant an understanding heart." Understanding is spiritual insight. It's used most of the time interchangeably with wisdom. And God goes on to say that He would give him an understanding and would give him understanding heart and a wise and understanding heart in verse 12. So Solomon is asking for wisdom from God. That's what he asked for. Again, if God were to come to us and say, "Ask anything you want, What would we ask for? Solomon asked for wisdom. What we need from God, and I believe I could argue what we need from God more than anything, is wisdom. Some will say, oh no, that's not true. We need repentance. If you're wise, you'll repent. I mean, you can go on and on. Wisdom. We need holiness. If you're wise, you'll be holy. Wisdom is a desperate need for all God's people. Solomon realizes that there is enabling power in this wisdom. Notice what he says. He says, give thy servant an understanding heart, for who is able to judge this so great a people? He's saying, Lord, I can't do this. Lord, I can't do this. I need understanding from you. I need wisdom from you in order to do this. He requests the wisdom that comes from God. Notice in the book of James, chapter 3, this wisdom from God is referred to in James 3 and verse 17 as the wisdom that is from above. It's the wisdom that is from above. So he's pleading for wisdom from the God who layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. Proverbs 2, verse 7, it says, God layeth up sound wisdom. That is, he lays it up in store. We read in Proverbs 2 and verse 6, for the Lord giveth wisdom. James 1 and verse 5, he gives wisdom liberally. That is, abundantly, generously, plentifully. And then it says, and upbraideth not. That is, you ask for wisdom, and God is not going to rebuke you for asking for wisdom. You can ask for a lot of other things, and God will rebuke you. But God giveth liberty, or liberally, and upbraideth not. He does not rebuke the one who asks for wisdom. God was pleased with what Solomon asked for and what he did not ask for. Again, back in our text in 1 Kings 3, verses 10 and 11, we see that God was pleased what he asked for, God was pleased what he didn't ask for. Solomon asked for that which is of great significance. We read in Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 7, wisdom is the principal thing. Wisdom is the primary thing. Wisdom is the foremost and overriding in importance. Wisdom is the principal thing. Reading on in that verse, it says, therefore, get wisdom. Get wisdom. Where do we get it? From God. It's the only place it can come from. From the Lord. The source of wisdom again in James 1 verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth liberally and upbraideth not. The book of Proverbs instructs us that we are to acquire wisdom, we are to embrace wisdom, we are to love wisdom, we are to cherish wisdom. Wisdom is the principal thing. Solomon asked for something of great value. Notice in the book of Job, chapter 28, we'll read verses 12 through 18. But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man knoweth not the price thereof, of this wisdom and understanding. Neither is it found in the land of the living. You can go to every university you want to go to. You won't find it there. The depth saith, it is not in me. And the sea saith, it's not with me. It cannot be gotten for gold. You can't pay for it. You can't buy it. Neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or the sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it. And the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. So Solomon asked for something that was of great value. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 and verse 14. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. Proverbs 8, verse 11, for wisdom is better than rubies, and all things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. All things that you can desire cannot be compared to wisdom. So again, if God were to come and say, ask anything you like, what do we ask for? In Ecclesiastes 2, verse 13, then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as night, or as far as light excelleth darkness. He asked for something very valuable. He also asked for something very beneficial to living life. We read there in Proverbs 3 and verse 13, happy is the man that findeth wisdom. This wisdom brings happiness. You know why many aren't happy? Because they're not wise. If you live wisely, you'll be happy. That's what it says. Proverbs 3, verse 13. It's also good for the soul. Proverbs 19, verse 8, he that getteth wisdom loveth his own soul. It's good for the soul. It's good for the most important part of us. It also gives life. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 12, wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Gives strength. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 19, wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 16, wisdom is better than strength. In Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 18, wisdom is better than the weapons of war. It also serves as a directive in life. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 10, we read, wisdom is profitable to direct. Wisdom. This is what Solomon asked for. Proverbs chapter 8, wisdom is personified and is seen crying out to man. And notice in Proverbs 8 and verse 10, wisdom says, receive my instruction and not silver. So we got to ask, what is this wisdom? What is this wisdom? Now let's go to James chapter 3. I asked you to turn there before and we didn't go there, but James chapter 3, verse 16 and verse 17. This wisdom that we're talking about must be distinguished from worldly wisdom. We see in verse 15, there is a wisdom that descendeth not from above. There is a wisdom that does not come from God. There is a wisdom, so called, of the world. Its character is this: it's earthly. That is, it has the spirit of the world. It's sensual, it's natural, and it's devilish, which means it's demonic. For where envy and strife is, and that's what this wisdom produces, this wisdom being talked about in verse 15, there is confusion in every evil work. But, now a contrast is drawn. The wisdom that is from above. This is the wisdom we're talking about. It's a wisdom that is distinguished from worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom leaves one detached from God. Worldly wisdom leaves one in ignorance. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 21, Paul said, "The world by wisdom knew not God." So there is a wisdom that leaves one in ignorance concerning God. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 24, we read that Christ is the wisdom of God. What is wisdom? Wisdom is Christ. Wisdom comes from God. Wisdom is an attitude of reverence for God in thought and in act. It is declared in Psalm 111, verse 10, Proverbs 9, verse 10, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Reverence for God is the beginning of wisdom. If a man or a woman has no reverence for God, they do not have wisdom from above. I don't care how much knowledge they have, they don't confuse knowledge with wisdom. This wisdom that comes from God and that we so desperately need. Who is the wise person? It is the person who is in agreement with God. The more you and I are in agreement with God, the wiser we are. Christ is the wisdom of God. The more Christ-like we are, the wiser we are. To be wise is to be in agreement with God. It is to view matters with a spiritual perspective. It is to view matters as God views them. That's wisdom. You begin to think like God, that's wise. You begin to see things like God, that's wise. The rejection of this wisdom brings adversity. The rejection of this wisdom brings misadventure. Notice in Proverbs chapter 1, Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 20. Proverbs chapter 1, we'll read verses 20 through 22. Wisdom crieth without. Again, it's personified. Christ is the wisdom that's personified. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of the concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she shutteth her word. She uttereth her words, saying, "How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge." And then notice verse 24 through 26. "Because I have called and ye refused." That is the rejection of wisdom. "I have stretched out my hand and no man regarded." That again is the rejection of wisdom. "But ye have set at naught all my counsel." There it is again, the rejection of wisdom. "And would none of my reproof." There it is again, the rejection of wisdom. "I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh." When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you. You see, the rejection of wisdom brings turmoil to life. Why are people's lives turned upside down? Why is their lives filled with confusion? Because they're not wise. They're not living lives of wisdom. Oh, how we need wisdom. We need to always be asking God for wisdom. Every single day, we need to ask God for wisdom. We need to be asking God throughout the day, "Oh God, give me wisdom." Someone says something, we need to pray to ourselves, "God, give me wisdom." Someone asks us something, we need to pray, "God, give me wisdom." The phone rings, we need to pray, "God, give me wisdom." And we have the advantage today, we have caller ID, and when you see certain names on there, you know, "Oh, Lord, give me some wisdom, because I know they're not calling to see how I'm doing." We need to always be asking God for wisdom. So if God would ask whatever you want. Some might ask for talent. Some might ask for gifts, for material resources. But may I say, without wisdom, you'll waste them all. You'll waste them. You need wisdom. You need to be asking God for wisdom. Because we're surrounded by evil. The influence of evil is everywhere, and we are faced with it every day. We need wisdom. Because according to Proverbs chapter 8 and also other places in Proverbs, wisdom delivers from evil. And wisdom teaches us to identify evil. And wisdom teaches us to avoid evil. The individual who plays with sin, the individual who plays with evil is not a wise person, it's a foolish person. Wisdom teaches you to avoid it. We need to always be asking God for wisdom. Because as we preach this morning, this world is filled with options. We have a lot of choices to make every day. And you realize that every single day there is the potential to ruin your life. Every day that potential is there. Every single day. There is the potential that our life could be ruined. We have to consistently make the right choices. And if one bad choice, one bad decision can ruin your life, can ruin your family's life, can bring misery to many, many people. So we need to pray, Lord, I need wisdom. I know I'm going to face evil today. I know I'm going to be faced with some decisions today. Lord, I need wisdom. I need wisdom in order to make the consistent right choices. Choices are based upon decisions. Decisions are fed by desire. So we have to be careful what desires are in our heart. If we have wrong desires in our heart, decisions are based upon desires many times. So you better be careful what desires are in your heart. So choices are based on decisions. Decisions made repeatedly produce habits. Produce habits. Look at the habits of some individuals. They've been produced by bad decisions. And habits produce lifestyles. All began with choice. Produces lifestyles. And lifestyles produce consequences. So you need wisdom. We need wisdom. We need wisdom desperately every single day. The truth is, many would not be faced with the decisions that they are faced with had they had wisdom initially. Because of foolishness, they put themselves in a bad situation and now they have to make other decisions. And most of the time, that individual just keeps making the same foolish decisions one after another. And then has no clue. I don't know why my life is such a mess. It's one bad decision after another. You see, wisdom doesn't put us in those situations. We need to always be asking God for wisdom because this world seeks to pull us away from God, seeks to pull us away from our duty to God. But wisdom keeps us in the path of duty. Wisdom keeps us in that path. We need wisdom. Again, God said to Solomon, ask what I shall give thee. And he could have asked for anything. But he sought understanding and wisdom from God. And I believe that it can be argued that that is our greatest need. Wisdom. wisdom from God. The more that we realize the days in which we live, the more we ought to be praying every day, God, give me wisdom. Lord, help me not to make a wrong choice, a wrong decision. Lord, give me wisdom. How many people would not have married the person they married had they used some wisdom? Use some wisdom. God says not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. It's a wise thing not to go down that road. Don't even go down that road. None and none we could go. There's a lot of situations that people would not be in today had they used some wisdom. And if you find yourself in those situations, don't continue making the same foolish decisions that just brings you further and further into the prison of that situation. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. But first of all, we need to recognize we lack it, that we're clueless, that we don't know what to do. Recognizing the importance of our calling, and again, our calling, our families, whatever. Lord, I need wisdom. Lord, I need you. And oh, that we would pray that every single day. Every single day. Over and over and over and over. Again, God, give me wisdom. There are things that can happen in a day that just infuriate you. And if you're not careful, your flesh will react, and that's very dangerous. And that's a good time to just pray, Lord, I need some wisdom right now because I'm about to whatever. I need wisdom. And God gives it. It's not in us naturally. We need this wisdom from God. And oh, how much better our lives would be. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us.